Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. The Big Four at Four.
Big Four at Four.
Four at Four.
Four big and blockbuster stories that you need to hear.
Big Story One.
Senator McCain has been battling glioblastoma for more than a year now. It's an aggressive form of brain cancer that has kept him away from D.C. for most of the time and getting treatment here in Phoenix. Now his office in a statement to KTAR saying in the year since his diagnosis, he has surpassed expectations for his survival. That's why he's chosen to discontinue treatment for cancer. His family thanking everyone for their support and prayers. His daughter Megan sharing on Twitter, quote, "We could not have made it without you. You've given us strength to carry on."
So it is sad news about John McCain that he will discontinue his cancer treatment. And all I can hope and pray for is that he is comfortable, that he is not in pain. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know how long John McCain will be on this earth. But I just hope he's comfortable. In meeting this man, you know, 20 years ago, he's as rock solid a human being as you're ever going to meet. And so it saddens me today to see this. I think the guy fought for a year. He's as tough as they come, and I'm still praying for a miracle.
The word is comfortable. I think you're right. I think that's the one word at this point. You want your loved one to be comfortable because that's what you hope and pray for, and that it's an easy passing. It's not. Look, I've seen it from both sides. My wife saw it with her mom. She made the decision not to get medical treatment and to go peacefully. I've seen it from the other side where somebody wasn't willing to accept defeat and up until the very end was trying to fight. And the doctors had to convince them, we cannot do anything for you. All we can do is make you comfortable. So I respect their decision.
Sure.
I embrace their decision. I'm sad. But I'm hopeful he is comfortable. I think that's the one word everybody wishes for.
Yeah, and I mean, his family has, I know this sounds weird. I wonder if his family has some peace, even though they know what they're about to go through. Because when you do make the decision to stop treatment, you know, sometimes your outlook changes and the moments you spend with that person become even more important.
Yeah.
And become more memorable and more special.
Well,
and for some people, you know, it's a relief to make that decision.
Yeah.
So I don't want to put words into McCain's mouth.
But I think you make a great point, though. The fifth stage is acceptance. And in acceptance, there's a comfort. There is an end, but not as an end as we know it. But you accept the fact that what is. And in my wife's case, it was the best 2 or 3 months with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope that for the McCain family, too.
Yeah. So, you know, I've known John McCain for
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and we've interviewed him on this show the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're
never going to meet another guy like that. That's the thing. You're never going to meet another guy. When they say when somebody walks into a room, they change the temperature. That's what this guy did. And I've only met a handful of people in my lifetime.
And you can meet him, have that reaction,
mm-hmm.
and disagree with every political thing
absolutely.
He's ever said.
Absolutely.
That's the other thing.
Absolutely. But there is something about this guy
sure.
that when you know, down the road, whatever, that you'll say, there was something about that guy.
Sure.
I mean, his whole story is better than a novel you couldn't write.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Texted Megan McCain today. She's been on the show for 10 years. She's a very good friend of both of ours. Just said, hey, we're thinking about you. We want you to know Arizona loves you. And it was hard. That's a hard day today.
It is.
It's a tough day. John McCain discontinuing cancer treatment. You're listening to the Big Four at Four. What we do is at 4:05, we take about 20 minutes and we bring you four big blockbuster stories.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story Two.
The number of voters increased by nearly 22,000 new voters. Even though Republicans hold a slight voter registration advantage overall, it was the Democratic Party that increased the most to the rate of 22,000 voters. versus the Republicans who had 5,300.
Arizona Secretary of State Michelle Reagan saying that Arizona's seen a bump in registered voters. You know, it doesn't surprise me. We have an open Senate seat because Jeff Flake has called it quits. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be Martha McSally on the Republican side against Kyrsten Sinema on the Democratic side. And it's that is going to be a very close race. And I think people want in on that. I think people want to say, okay, if Jeff Flake, a Republican, steps down, if you're a Democrat, you're saying, this is my opportunity. If you're a Republican, you're saying, how do we keep it Republican?
Arizona is traditionally a red state, Republican, but there are signs it's shifting to maybe more of a purple, or as I like to say, bruise-colored.
A bruise-colored
state. Trump only carried the state over Democratic rival Hillary Clinton by 3.5 percentage points.
Interesting.
Michelle Reagan just said.
Yeah.
There is a slight edge of Republican voters outnumbering Democrats. And what we've heard, too, is that it's going to come down to independents. It's going to come down to those swing voters.
And I think it's another reason why President Trump's coming to town. He's coming to town probably after
next
this primary.
Weeks. Next yeah. 2 weeks,
so
maybe?
So what, Arizona votes in, is it four
Tuesday.
Days? I can't do the math. I think it's 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
After the primary, you know that Donald Trump is going to be here to try and help get Martha McSally elected in November.
Right.
She's a Republican. He wants to keep that seat Republican. I think that he loves it's not going to be Jeff Flake anymore. It's going to be Martha McSally. But Martha McSally is a toughie. I mean, you know, right now we're seeing her kind of like everything Trump does. But I don't know if that's necessarily
going to be
the case down the line.
I don't know if it's going to be Martha McSally, though. I mean, it could be Kyrsten Sinema.
Oh, I'm just saying.
On the Republican
side. Leading up to November.
Gotcha.
Trump is going to come here trying to rally the troops.
Right.
Trying to get people to vote for Martha McSally.
The one thing we keep hearing is the Republicans cannot be complacent. The Republicans can't just sit idly by because more Democrats, newly engaged Arizona Democrats, are fired up and they're going to try to get the vote out, and it could come down to Republicans didn't turn out, but the Democrats did, and we have a shift for the first time since 1988. You could have a Democrat in a Senate seat, and we could also see Democrats in other positions in the state too.
Well, we have the gubernatorial race. You know, it's interesting though. I mean, we're gonna know a lot more after Tuesday, right?
We're gonna know who the candidates are.
We're gonna know who Doug Ducey will face.
Right.
Is it going to be David Garcia or is it going to be State Senator Steve Farley? I don't know. Anything really could happen there. You know. So who will Ducey face? We'll know that Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Who will Sinema face? We're pretty much, you know it's going
Martha
to be
Martha McSally seems
but
to think
will.
It's her.
Well, it is her. She's up 48-22-17.
Yeah, but she's already released an ad.
Right.
Basically, hey, I'm Martha McSally. Don't vote for Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah, and then it won't be, you know, Republicans bashing each other. It'll be a Republican bashing a Democrat and a Democrat bashing a Republican. So, you know, at the end of this, you're right. In November, I mean, obviously anything could happen. We could have a Democratic governor and a Democratic senator. We could have a Republican governor, second term. And a Republican senator, or we can have one and one.
Yeah.
I think
it's a toss up.
I do. I think if you were to look at it, and if I'm a betting man, I think you have Ducey and Sinema. But anything can happen. I'm not really going out on a limb.
But isn't that amazing, though?
Yeah.
That Doug Ducey is not necessarily the shoo-in. Still at this point in this election, I thought he would have been way ahead of everybody else.
He really hasn't made his argument yet. I'm with Governor Jan Brewer, who joins us every Wednesday. She said it 2 days ago. Ducey hasn't made his argument
yet. After Tuesday, he
will. He's not really fighting anybody right now. I mean, he's just waiting to see who his opponent is going to be. And then, you know, listen, Ducey will square off with you. And he's going to go for the neck. I mean, he's going to try and go right for you. Garcia or Farley, they better be ready. Ducey's a tough cookie.
Yeah.
He'll get into it with you. He's gotten into it with us on this very show.
Oh, sure.
Many different times.
Sure.
So we'll know more obviously after the primary on Tuesday.
Right.
But Arizona Democrats are fired up. The numbers show it, and we'll see what happens.
Well, wait till Tuesday night.
You've been listening to Big Four at Four. We're just halfway through. We've got big story 3 and 4 to go.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story 3.
The last poll I saw had me my favorable ratings at plus 7. Of course, there's governors out there that have higher favorable ratings. The poll that will matter is the poll in November called the election.
And that's the last time we spoke to Governor Ducey about poll numbers. You know, it kind of seems like, at least for now, you know, the polls show that it's a toss-up between Governor Doug Ducey and whoever he's going to fight, who's a Democrat. But it also appears that the Republican Governors Association has spent $9 million already on Governor Ducey's reelection. And let's see, we're not in September yet.
Yeah, it's only August, and they're afraid of the Red for Ed movement. You know, of course, you know, what do you always say? 50,000 people showed up on Doug Ducey's front lawn down at the state capitol. Teachers are either skeptical or they're cautiously optimistic or they don't know who to believe. And you can't blame them. So,
why can't they believe their paycheck?
They can believe the paycheck now, but can they believe it next year, the year after?
Not necessarily.
Right.
That's fair.
Right.
They believe it now. They're seeing it more now.
Right. But
I had a teacher call me the other day.
What'd she call you?
Gatos.
Mm. Okay.
She got a raise.
Knew that, right?
Yeah, and it put her on a higher tax bracket.
Oh, yikes.
But you can't control stuff
That's
like
true.
That. You know what I mean?
That's true.
You can't control stuff like that. And so, you know, what I said was, what do you want them to do?
Right.
I mean, you wanted a raise. I mean,
unfortunately, that could have happened.
Of course it could happen.
Yeah. So this year, voters are going to decide between Ducey and another candidate on the Democratic side. But to me, this is a harbinger of things to come. The Republicans are going to sink a ton of money into the gubernatorial race, and Trump is going to come here. There is nothing that is a sure Colts, you know, lock with the Republicans, and it kind of surprises me because the economy is good.
You're talking about Governor Ducey's
I'm talking about every election in this state that we could. I don't see a blue wave coming, but there could be splotches of blue in certain races.
Right.
I don't think it'll happen in the gubernatorial race, but as we mentioned, Kyrsten Sinema could win against Martha McSally. What surprises me is how many Republicans are concerned that they could lose. So you're going to see a ton of ads from the GOP. Former Governor Jan Brewer said you can't be complacent. The Republicans can't sit on their hands this time around. And we've already seen Republicans spend a ton of money just for Ducey. It will only ramp up, and he will spend his own, you know, his campaign money. Mm-hmm. You're going to see a ton of stuff between Wednesday morning and November for the election.
No doubt. And I just hope some of those politicians who lose clean up your signs, get them off the road. It's an eyesore.
Yeah. And pick up the signs of the people who beat you, too.
That's
the punishment. That's motivation, man. I don't want to pick those signs up. I'm going to win.
It's illegal. You can't do that.
I know.
You're listening to the Big Four at 4. The first 20 minutes of the 4 o'clock hour, we bring you four big blockbuster stories.
The Big Four at 4. Big Story 4.
Let's talk about if this is true or false. The Trump administration is intentionally slowing the FBI vetting refugees, excuse me.
One former official who worked on refugee issues before leaving government earlier this year said it's a precipitous decline that the Trump administration has, I won't say shackled, but have dramatically slowed the pace of the FBI and their security reviews for refugees in recent months.
And what would the point of doing that be?
You don't let as many people in. You don't allow as many people. Maybe it takes them longer to become U.S. citizens. You slow immigration down any way you can.
I think it's difficult to deal with refugees coming in.
And refugee admissions have plunged to an all-new low.
People that want asylum
mm-hmm.
because, you know, these are the people that are showing up at the border. We've talked about this before. It's not the 24-year-old guy from Mexico who's got a kid and a wife and needs a job and sneaks into the country and gets a job and sends all the, you know, all his money home.
But
that's
it's also
not what we're talking about anymore. It's just different.
But it's also people who applied overseas in, let's say, certain war-torn countries, too. They're not coming over. It has declined by half. You only have about 21,000 people where they allowed 45,000 people to actually come in as refugees. It has I mean, the faucet, if you will, is almost turned off.
It slowed down.
Yes, it has.
Very much. Yeah. All right. That's it. You've been listening to the Big Four at Four.
The Big Four at Four with Mac and Gatos. Get the Big Four at Four delivered to your phone. Subscribe to the Mac and Gatos podcast on Google Music or the Apple Podcast app.
All right. Arizona votes in 4 days. Is State Superintendent of Public Instruction Diane Douglas this clueless?
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Did you hear what she did? We'll tell you next.
Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
Don't you love it when your employer tells you to vote and who to vote for? Oh, wait a minute. They're not supposed to do that.
Wrong.
It's even more wrong when you've got a government agency like the Department of Ed.
Or a candidate.
Or a candidate who is the boss telling you, hey, make sure you vote for Diane Douglas for school superintendent this time around. Yeah, it happened.
All right. So Diane Douglas is the superintendent of public instruction.
The current.
She's terrible at her job. Nice lady. Absolutely horrific at what she does. Okay.
And this is another example of...
This is a...
What?
Mm-hmm, of being clueless.
Yeah.
She's been clueless for years. I'm sorry, but that's just the case. So, you know, the building that she works at, the Arizona Department of Education, there was an internal email that was sent to all department employees, and it said, vote Diane Douglas, the Wonder Woman of Education.
All caps.
All caps. Yeah, you're not allowed to do that. How desperate is it? See, I can't figure out if it's desperate or just stupid.
Well, either way implies that she had something to do with it. Now, she says this was brought to her attention. It was an overzealous employee. But I don't know what to believe here.
Well, I mean, we asked Monica Lindstrom, Mac and Gatos, legal expert. She sent us this. I'll read what Monica wrote. The email arguably violates campaign finance laws.
Right.
The penalty is probably a civil fine.
But it does not preclude her. It doesn't disqualify her as a candidate.
But you can't do this. You can't tell people to vote for you if you're in the same office. And I think she probably did it because she knows most people in her office know that she's not very good at her job and they're going to vote another way. That's just me. That's what I think. So I don't know. Diane Douglas, vote for Diane Douglas, the Wonder Woman of education. It is an insult to Wonder Woman.
It is. Linda Carter should be very angry.
Oh, I was talking about the new Wonder Woman. Fantastic.
Well, the
movie.
old Wonder Woman, and I say that with all due respect, actually lives here. Gal Gadot does not live
here.
I
love Gal Gadot.
I love Linda Carter.
So is she just clueless, or is this another example of lack of leadership? I would say
Well,
it's
you could
both.
Say yes. Yeah. I was going to say, you could say yes and yes. I mean, I would have assumed, but you can't assume, do your employees know that they can't put out emails like this? I guess they don't, but it falls on you as the head of the department
right.
that people are going to kind of look at you with an eyebrow raised as to, are you sure you didn't know about this?
All right.
You know, you don't know.
I think she knew about it. I think she's scared she's going to lose in the primary.
But, right, but it's my point is that it's lack of leadership. That again, it demonstrates a lack of, did you cover all your bases and tell everybody, hey, don't put something out there that you cannot do.
I mean, I don't know how Diane Douglas is going to tout all of her accomplishments because I just don't see any. You know, we had Diane Douglas on during the Red for Red movement where the teachers went down and parked themselves right in front of Ducey's front yard, right? And we had Diane Douglas on, and she's talking about, well, we may have to sue the teachers, we may have to take their certificate away. And I'm thinking, aren't you supposed to be helping a little bit?
Not exactly the tone or the message you want to hear if you're a teacher, that if I walk out, if I don't do my job, I'll be fired?
Yeah, I mean, the teachers were put in an impossible situation. You know, Governor Ducey.
No fault of their own.
No, Governor Ducey wasn't going to pay him. He wasn't going to pay him.
He was adamant that the number now, the 1% or the 1.1%.
I'm glad we don't have to go over those numbers. It was a terrible number.
It was, I mean, on a Tuesday, he was adamant. On Thursday, he came up with a new plan.
Right. And Ducey told us this just this week when he was in for his monthly exclusive. He said he listened.
To the teachers.
He did. He said he listened. Now, you have to figure out if you believe that. Listen, I think Ducey wants to get reelected. And the only way he's going to get reelected, you know, you go back a couple months, is if he fixes this problem or listens or does something to help the teachers. And it wasn't going to be Diane Douglas doing anything.
No.
So, again, did Ducey have to be dragged kicking and screaming? Yes. But I don't care.
But he got it done.
I just want the teachers to get paid. I don't care who takes credit for it. I think teachers should take credit for it. I think Red for Ed should take some credit for it, not as much as the teachers. And I think Doug Ducey should take credit for it. And he even said this on Tuesday.
Yep.
Give credit to the teachers. And I agree with them. But Diane Douglas, what can I give her credit on? Nothing. She was so quiet during this Red for Ed movement. She was nowhere to be found.
Well, the only time she really came out is to tell the teachers to advise them not to strike.
Right.
Hey, you know, don't do it. I would not want you to do that. But there was no solution, no alternative, no real plan. It was, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
So Diane Douglas's plan to get reelected is to put out an email blast at 5 o'clock yesterday to everybody in the departments, you know, of in the
everybody
Arizona
worked at the Department of Education,
yeah, and saying, vote for me.
Vote for Diane Douglas, the Wonder Woman of education.
I think we all wonder how she was ever involved in education. I think we all wonder how she got this job. Again, I don't tell you who to vote for. Just don't vote for Diane Douglas. Coming up next.
Mm-hmm.
Do Phoenix police officers need to use their tasers more often? Next.
Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
A new report says that 28 Phoenix police, out of 28 Phoenix police shootings, two used tasers. Phoenix police officers deployed their tasers in just 7% of cases that involved officer gunfire in the first 6 months of 2018. Now, we've talked about how violence against the police has gone up, and specifically about the Phoenix Police Department. Is this number too low? Is it too high? Why is it only two tasers versus 28 Phoenix police shootings? Let's talk to Darren Birch now. He's got 30 years law enforcement, many with the Phoenix PD, retired Phoenix police sergeant, and author of the new book, Twisted But True, about his life in law enforcement. Darren, is this number high or low to you? 28?
No, I think it sounds about right. What's more important is looking at the individual cases to see if that was appropriate or not. That type of weapon, a taser, is a very specialized tool that has limitations. So you wouldn't use it in a lethal type exchange with somebody with a gun or somebody charging you with a knife because of the distance that the taser propels those probes is a limited distance of 20 feet. So if a single officer was out there with a gun, with just his taser, he's going to end up dead.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. If a man is, let's say that you got a suspect who's got a knife, and I'm the cop, I'm not pulling my taser, I'm pulling my firearm. That knife could cut right through me. That's a deadly weapon. I'm not screwing around here. I'm not going to try and tase you if you've got a knife, especially if you have a gun. Well, I'm not even looking at my taser.
Yeah, there are scenarios, but they're very, very unique where you have somebody with a knife, they're threatening, but they're not charging, and you may have multiple officers. That's the perfect time that you could then deploy a taser because you're not putting other officers' lives at risk because they have their service weapon out. So there are those scenarios, but again, the scenario would dictate whether an officer would be even have the luxury of pulling out a taser.
Yeah, Darren Birch is joining us, and I would think that, do you usually use a taser if someone is resisting arrest? Like if one officer has the guy kind of down and he's struggling and he's moving and he doesn't want to be arrested, isn't that when most officers deploy the taser?
It really depends on the particular police department. They all have their different general orders or operational procedures as it dictates the use of a taser. However, I can say before I left with the Phoenix, you were able to use your taser with an uncooperative, combative individual. But again, a taser, you don't want to use it around anybody who's pregnant. You don't want to use it somebody that you think has a health problem, maybe a heart condition. So there's a lot of limitations to the taser. So I don't want to overuse it, but then I don't want to underuse it. The best thing about tasers is always having the training and no shoot scenarios and when to use a taser, because that's the best kind of training, is because there's so many specialized scenarios, we couldn't even list them in a day.
Retired Phoenix Police Sergeant and author Darren Birch joins us, over 30 years of police experience. Then Darren, and I think I know the answer to this, but you tell me, then why have one? Why have a taser then if it's used so infrequently, and if most calls it's necessary for you to have a firearm? And I don't want to take firearms away from cops, but why have the taser then?
Because it's the perfect tool for perfect situations. Just like officer presence is a a threshold for, to prevent that use of force. Just like verbal persuasion, just like your mace, just like your side-handled baton, just like the, what they call the beanbag. These are all tools, and collectively, they provide us with a less lethal alternative, which is good, even if it's 7%, because 7% times 10, it's not bad.
Darren, one thing I don't understand is tasers don't do the job all the time. You could nail a guy with the taser, and for one reason or another, that guy's still walking. I don't get that part.
Well, it's happened to me. I had a young patrol officer. There was a subject that was threatening a woman. He was beating her. He was dragging her into an apartment. The officer, rightfully so, was afraid of a barricade situation and was ready to deploy his taser. It was ineffective on him. I went to grab him and throw him on the ground, and I got tased. So, it depends on different drugs in their system and all sorts of other factors, to include their clothing. So it's not the perfect tool, but it's a great tool in certain situations.
What does it feel like to get tased?
Not fun. It was not fun at all.
Jeez.
Not fun, but specifically, what is it? Yeah, I knew it's it, not fun.
Does it lock your body up, or what happens?
It does. If you picture, being electrocuted when putting some kind of metal, device into a outlet, it's kind of like that, except over an extended amount of time. Luckily, I was able to just hold on to the guy until the cycle was off, and I was able to resume the fight.
Retired Phoenix Police Sergeant and author Darren Birch. Darren, thank you for the insight, as always. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys.
The best answer I've heard all week. What does it feel?
Fun.
What does it feel like to get tased? Not fun.
And it shouldn't be fun. I mean, those things should not tickle, but as we pointed out, sometimes they don't work. But as Darren pointed out, better to have that tool in your arsenal than not.
Yeah.
So this, again, we always tell you, read more than the headline. Mm-hmm. 28 Phoenix police shootings, 2 used tasers. You say, why? What? It's not for every situation, but neither is a gun. Neither is a firearm.
Suspects these days are more combative. They're carrying a weapon, and I'll say it again. If I'm a cop, you got a knife, you ain't going to get tased.
Right.
You're going to get shot.
Right.
Because if you come towards me with a knife,
that is a deadly
weapon. And guess what? I'm going home. You might not be, but I am.
Right. All right. Coming up, we've got the 5 o'clock KTAR news expansion, 15 minutes of commercial-free, nonstop news, traffic, and weather. An announcement by the McCain family came down this morning. We've got the latest on that, so make sure you keep listening.